morning, everyone. I've got a couple announcements before the service begins. So first of all, today is an intergenerational service, so the kids will remain in the service. They don't get to march out with a lantern today. Second, I'd like to say a big thank you to all of those who've been outside at helping make the church grounds look nice and making your own vitamin D while doing so. Also a thank you to our Rough Rider mowers, and you can still join the team of the Rough Riders. Just sign up and receive Zen in the Meditative Mower training. Also thanks to John Kuhn, Jerry and Esther Flakis, Robert Ayler, Ray Grosh, Jim Hansen, who were all sighted this Saturday, planting, weeding, trimming, just trying to make things look nicer all around. So you'll see new flowers in, you'll see some stuff that looks nice. And there's plenty of room for other people. If you see a weed, feel free to take it home. And then a special thank you to Robert Ayler for coordinating the work on the vegetable garden. Go out and take a look at that after the service. And thanks also to all the people who've been working in the garden already to get it planted and who have donated seeds and other plants for it. Our speaker today is going to be Joel Gilbertson White. And if you're wondering why that name sounds familiar, well, this is Joel's second time to join us as a speaker this year. And Chris White can give you more details. Joel is a UU ministerial candidate and graduate of Star King School for the ministry in Berkeley, California. In the summer of 2013, almost 1 year ago, Joel moved with spouse Stephanie and son Henry to Iowa City from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And there, Joel has served as the coordinator of UU Campus Ministry and as social action coordinator. In addition to theology, spiritual study, and social justice, Joel's personal passions include music, you'll hear some today, sound, computers, math, science, art, writing, volleyball, disc golf, and yoga, and you can probably encourage him to do other outside activities if you'd like. Thank you.
Today with these words from Kathleen McTeague. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together. Now please take a moment to greet those sitting nearby. Thank you.
together. So.
Let the flame that we light gather us into the warmth of this community and be kindled in each of us. Please stand as you are willing and able and join in our opening hymn number 134, Our World is One World. Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with the spirit of love in everything we do. My name is Paul Fackler, and I'm the worship associate for this morning's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that all visitors, wherever they are on life's journey and whatever their backgrounds, will find a lasting home here. Whether you have a small voice inside you that sounds like Ethel Merman whispering, or has that ringing theatricality of Ricardo Montalban welcoming you to his personal island, or even if it is a strange amalgam of Frank Oz playing Yoda, we welcome you. Welcome you, we do. Whether you hear the voice of Gandhi or of Mr. T inside your head, we welcome you. Whether Amy Winehouse is humming in your cerebellum or Peter Boyle is belting out his young Frankenstein version of Puttin' on the Ritz, we welcome you. We hope that you will add your voice to the many voices that make up this community and let yourself be heard. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop by the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of prodigious and spectacular upcoming church activities. And we welcome you, whether member, visitor, or friend, to participate in all that is offered. Please take a moment at this point in the service to silence all electronics. For children without a phone, to silence, please assist parents in those pre-electronic generations around you. We are also, and again, welcome here to all this morning. We are so pleased that you have chosen to celebrate and worship with us.
One of the ways that we care for our wider community is by contributing to our local food pantries, both financially and through the collection of non-perishable food items, which we donate each month. If you have food items to share, please bring them forward at this point in the service or ask a child to bring them forward for you. And now I also invite the children to come to the front and enjoy a story. Straightforward story that won't be anything you're not going to follow too closely. Just a story about her making friends. Lulu loves being Ladybug Girl. Ladybug Girl makes friends everywhere she goes. "Hi," she says. "Want to play?" "Sure," says Sam. Ladybug Girl goes on adventures with her friends. "Let's pretend the world is upside down," she says to Bingo. Ladybug Girl and her friends fly through the garden. "Whee!" said Butterfly Girl. Ladybug Girl makes art with her friends. "How does this look?" she asks Bingo. Ladybug Girl also likes to help her friends. "Need a hand?" she asks Mrs. Robbins, her neighbor. "Thank you," Mrs. Robbins replies. Finally, Ladybug Girl and her friends love dance parties. "This is so much fun," says Bumblebee Boy. "Yes, making friends is the best," says Ladybug Girl. So I have some questions. It's kind of like,
you know, there's going to be a
question. How would this story be different if Ladybug Girl was playing by herself?
Wouldn't be anyone included.
We wouldn't have so much fun.
Probably a different title, too. I'm trying to think of what the title would be. Ladybug Girl. But a lady friend.
Yeah, hangs out by herself. Something like that. Really, the reason that I want to share this is because this is a story about relationships, which is what the theme of today's service is. Wow. So when she wanted to pretend the world was upside down, she was creating a world to invite her friends into. When she and her friends were flying through the garden, they were on an adventure together. That was the important part. She asked her dog Bingo how art looked. And she was, in that case, getting feedback from another. She might not have been able to discern exactly what the dog thought about it. She probably asked the wrong person to feedback from art. But on the other hand, she was afraid that she was going to get panned for a bad heart. So I was like, look at that. So anyway, I encourage you, and you probably are already pretty good at this, make friends wherever you go, whenever you can. Make friends, hang out with them, and have a good time. But you want to go to the next one. That's all I got for you. So thank you, and today we do not have
So
we can stay here today. It's an intergenerational service.
This church is a community of ourselves. Its energy and resources are our energy and resources. Its wealth is what we share. As we contribute to the life of this community, we affirm our lives within it. The gifts of the congregation will now be gratefully received. Thank you.
Our first reading today is All We Are One by Reverend Yvonne Sion. Each of us comes from a different place, yet all we are one. We carve for ourselves our own unique space, yet all we are one. We learn how to speak, eat, dress, cook, and play in different ways. Of common homeland, we have not a trace, yet all we are one. We kill, maim, and harm one another with no thought for God's will. We forget the one God and one grace, yet all we are one. On a mountain in East Africa, near Olduvai Gorge, our common mother, Eve, says that we come from one human race, and all we are one. I invite you now, while remaining seated, to join in singing our centering hymn, number 391 in your gray hymnals, Voice Still and Small. This is a time in our service when we share our joys and concerns. We do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. If you have a joy or concern to share, please raise your hand and an usher will bring you a microphone. Briefly introduce yourself and share your joy or concern.
This is Chris. Would you light a candle in memory of my childhood friend Nancy, who died very unexpectedly earlier this month, way too soon. Thank you.
Hi, my name's Barb. Your continued prayers for my friend Sharon, who is struggling with lung cancer. Much appreciated.
I'd like you to say some prayers for the family of Janet, my neighbor. She died Tuesday. We had the funeral last night. She was just a wonderful, wonderful neighbor. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Al. A candle, please, for my friend Jim Daniels. Jim was one of my first good friends here in Wisconsin. One of the nifty things is that he compelled through the competition my relationship with joy and love. Also, a candle of joy for my daughter Allison. She starts her new adventure living on her own in Madison.
Hi, this is Kirsten. Would you light a candle to remember us? We can't go there. My family buried my mother cemetery. And it took me back to the fact that there are a lot of people who did take the route and join the military and gave their lives for this country. Though I'm anti-war, I do support those that have made their decision.
This is Dennis. Light a candle in memory of those who died serving our country.
And I will light one final candle for the joys and concerns we hold in our hearts.
As we begin our time of meditation, I offer these words of Rumi, a prayer in the form of an invitation. Listen, O drop. Give yourself up without regret, and in exchange, gain the ocean. Listen, O drop. Bestow upon yourself this honor, and in the arms of the sea, be secure. Who indeed would be so fortunate, an ocean wooing a drop? Spirit of love, life, and joy, guide each of us here today to find within ourselves and among our relationships the capacity to connect in meaningful ways with depth, understanding, and security of self through community. On this Memorial Day weekend, let us pause to remember those who offered themselves to something larger than themselves, and those who have come before, striving to make a better and more just world for future generations. Let us pause to remember the families missing the loss of their loved ones, who died too soon, maybe some even here with us today. May our recognition of this gratitude for their hoping, generosity, and courage lead us to experience all people in our lives, not only as other, but also to know these people in a deeply connected sense, knowing the selfhood we share as part of a life bigger than these bodies to which we find ourselves inextricably bound. And now for all our unnamed joys, fears, anchors, sorrows, and hopes, residing unspoken within us, let us share a few moments of silent reflection.
This will be a song that many of you are familiar with, and if you know the chorus, you're welcome to sing along. And I suppose if you happen to know the verses, you're welcome to sing along there as well.
Thank you. fountains ring. Oh, let the angels flutter.
Our second reading is called Personal and the Communal by Maria Harris from her book, Fashion Me a People. Even today, in many Christian communions, it is not unusual to be taught that religion is what a man does with his solitariness. At the extreme, this ideal of the mature person often became someone capable not only of individualism, but of rugged individualism, someone able to make decisions and judgments autonomously, alone, someone who could always be totally rational in all situations, even if being rational was inappropriate. We have only to look at some of the dominant models of adulthood in our society to see how ingrained this individualism has become, especially in the worlds of business, government, and the military. The loner as hero becomes the epitome of human success, and looking out for number one, the quintessential human vocation. This vision of human maturity is being shattered, however, by the force and power of personalism, which has come into its own in this century. In contrast to individualism, personalism emphasizes the understanding that all, not just each, human beings have equal dignity, and that all, not just each, human beings have the right to the abundant gifts of the Creator. This set of beliefs draws special attention, just as the gospel does, to the marginal of the world, the great so-called underclass of the poor, the disenfranchised, and the ill. It draws particular attention to the poorest of the poor in every society, namely women, to the unequal distribution of the world's goods, and to the disproportionate burdens placed on the backs of people of color. It knows, as Martin Luther King Jr. taught, that it is a cruel jest to tell people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps when they have no boots. And it causes the realization that the doctrine of rugged individualism is in actuality a celebration of only some individuals, more often than not, powerful, wealthy, white men. The greatest contribution of personalism, however, has been the exploration of what it means to be a human person and the discovery that to be as a person means to be with. That is to say, that we are only fully persons when we are in community and in communion with one another. We are related to one another not only by baptism but by blood. We are responsible to one another for life and for death. Although we may not be our brothers and sisters' keepers, we are our brothers and sisters' brothers and sisters. In other words, being persons is possible only if we are in community. Our existence, humanly, as communities, falls short whenever the personhood of even one in the community is denied. Here ends the reading. Please join me in hymn number 1021 in our teal hymnals. Lean on me. Please rise and by your spirit as you are able.
before I start with the sermon, I would like to just kind of note that several of the readings that I've chosen today were from writers of different faiths than ours, and so their theistic views and philosophical views may not necessarily match the views of this congregation or of myself, but they still have some very important things to say, so I wanted to make sure to share them. Okay, well, for the past few months, I've worked as a substitute teacher in the Iowa City Community School District. Recently, I was assigned to teach math, which was my undergraduate major. The teacher's notes said that once all the students were done with their worksheet assignment, they could watch Monsters University. The worksheet was Solving Systems of Inequalities. Here you can think of y is greater than or equal to negative 2x plus 6. Remember that stuff? Some of them? Okay. I suggested to those who got done early, they may want to help those who are struggling to finish. One of the brightest students responded, "Why should I help anyone with their assignments? Nobody helps me." Another chimed in, "They're going to have to learn to work on their own eventually, so why not now?" Nobody else chimed in. Now, I knew many of the students wanted to watch the movie, however, and I wondered, did nobody understand that they wouldn't get to watch Monsters University if they didn't help each other? Instead, when each got done, they checked out, turning on their phones to Facebook, YouTube, Snapchat, Twitter, Instagram, or texting, or some such. Keep in mind, I'm a sub. It's tough to keep things. Okay. And even regular teachers have told me that they have difficulty with phones. So the requests to put out phones, they're frequently met with frustration, exasperation, and sometimes even disdain. So if you ever want to feel like a jerk, stepping into a classroom and clarifying expectations about a phone is a great way to experience that. So during three different class periods with algebra, I watched as self-focused attitudes and individual agency overrode any invitation to help their neighbors succeed. And I recognize these are teens, and they're developing their own sense of self and embracing their emerging autonomy as they come into their own. So I will cut them some slack. The real problem here is that this example is a microcosm of what's happening in our society at large. The discourse of many human cultures, especially our national culture, provides a strong tendency to make us think of ourselves first as individuals. So strong, in fact, that this framework often goes unrecognized and is taken completely for granted. Fragmented by definition into distinct private beings, most people do not know that they are part of a greater community-sized self, including the self consisting of the entire community of humanity. Even more, as we grow in enlightenment and awareness, we become a sentient facet of the natural universe, of its desire to know itself and become an outlet to speak and work for its own good. Ralph Waldo Emerson, a 19th century Unitarian, described his concept of the oversoul as the inclusion of our unified true self beyond the limits of our comparably minuscule human egos. As I see it, Emerson's oversoul has suffered through ever more divisions due to assertions of independent individuality. This is also from somebody who wrote a book called, or an essay called Self-Reliance. So it goes both ways. These divisions happen at the interpersonal level in our day-to-day relations, as well as the larger institutional and cultural levels, and even within theologies that lay down frameworks toxic to full togetherness. When we are isolated, confined to our separate automobiles, communicating from behind our cell phones or computer screens, or most importantly, isolated within our own self-conversations, there is a tendency to regress to a lower common denominator, a self a bit more savage, devolving through fear of negative interactions with those outside of our limited sphere. However, choosing to be alone is not the same as isolation. But if we are alone by default, without easy means of coming together despite a yearning to do so, I would call that isolation. There was a longitudinal study published in 2006 by sociologist Miller McPherson. He asked and answered the question, have the core discussion networks of Americans changed in the past two decades? In 1985, they had collected nationally representative data on the confidants with whom Americans discuss important matters. In the 2004 collection, the authors replicated those questions to assess social change in core network structures. Discussion networks were smaller in 2004 than 1985. The number of people saying there is no one with whom they discuss important matters nearly tripled. And most astonishingly, while the most frequent response in 1985 was that they had three confidants that they could discuss important matters, the same question in 2004 had more people saying they had zero confidants with whom they could discuss than any other number. I can only imagine major contributing factors of longer work hours, pressure to perform, combined with more frequent uprooting for job relocations. But might these also be some change in our collective psyche insisting that we can or maybe even should go it alone? Now, on the community and society levels, there are still large fractures preventing integration across dimensions of class, race, culture, gender, able-bodiedness, and a variety of other dimensions. In his book, Hearts and Hands, Creating Community in Violent Times, Luis Rodriguez writes, we are seeing the wholesale abandonment of young people, particularly those who require more guidance, resources, patience, and caring of community. Regrettably, many of these youths have already been abandoned by the economy, but the other important truth is that well-off communities are affected by this process as well. Only once has a young person said to me, why don't you inner-city people pick yourselves up by your own bootstraps? This happened in 1994 when I was serving as a poet in residence for five private schools in Bryn Mawr and the wealthy mainline communities of Pennsylvania. The parents of these children, almost all white, contributed at that time around $17,000 a year for their schooling. He continues later, the difference here was that the children in Bryn Mawr were expected to succeed, which is its own distortive pressure. In my neighborhood, however, they were expected to fail. And if someone manages to succeed, they are often considered as special, not like the others, establishing a breach between that youth and their community. The young man who wondered why us inner city folk lack the fortitude to pick ourselves up didn't even see how many resources and support systems existed for him to make it. Nobody does it alone. The self-made person, the so-called rugged individualist, is mostly farce. We all need help. Unfortunately, the stimulus of this economy, investing to make profit, becomes the leading metaphor in our relationships with children. If they don't appear to produce value, then society has determined that they are not worth any investment. Yet even when they are considered worthy of such an investment, their true value as human beings is subverted for the superficial ones of power, status, and profit. On a personal level, we're less powerful working alone than when we operate in concert to achieve each other's goals. Instead, we are frequently individual agents regarding our vocational decisions, our spending decisions, our social engagements, and our time management. You may be feeling some incongruity here. The things I just said are so ingrained in the natural order of things that an instant reaction might be, well, of course these decisions should be individually made. Deep in our sense of normalcy is the notion of individual liberty. Deeply instilled in our national identity has been a lifting up of this individual liberty. Freedom to act unfettered according to our choices is a cornerstone of the American dream. but I believe this dream has been perverted. Now more than ever, the freedoms have turned into license for those with the privilege of, for example, being the smartest in a math class, or having more than adequate resources and connections in the political or legal systems. The license of privilege here, I see, is the choice to participate in community, be it assisting slower students with worksheets, or including community members in decision-making around the implementation of budgets and laws. That's a choice between doing that or a choice in just going it alone. From lessons I've learned in community organizing in Pennsylvania, power comes from organized money. And we see that happening more and more now. Or, for those who do not have so much money, power comes from organized people. By coming together, people can become not only politically powerful, but also powerful in discourse, developing and affirming views in need of lifting up and dispelling toxic views to community. From Luis Rodriguez's recent account I just shared, I hear him asking for the goal of supporting the youth in his community, regardless of their perceived return on investment. He asks for them to have the same tools of the Bryn Mawr students, so they can have equitable chances and further, so that they can become their very best. Without equitable opportunities, their own liberty to decide on vocation, spending, social engagements, and time management becomes limited. The beauty, then, is when they succeed, is first that it honors their human worth and dignity, and second, in a more instrumental sense, when given the support as they become their very best, their full participation as citizens may improve the world in ways in which it might languish were they stuck with limited options. Our other systems of separateness cause not only waste of potential, talent, and human worth, but material waste in general. For just one example, our culture produces unfinished plates upon plates of food from restaurants thrown into the garbage, while people in the very same communities report going hungry. We also have homes, mine included, in which the food sometimes goes bad in the refrigerators as the families are too busy or occupied to notice, or simply the portions of food sold are too large for smaller families or individuals to eat before they spoil. And we're too busy or unconnected, or perhaps something else, to invite over a neighbor for dinner, or create systems in which meals and food are regularly shared beyond the bounds of nuclear family domiciles into which we've evolved. In all of these cases, the human oversoul is fragmented and waiting to become whole. The world of theology is rife with fragmentation of our unified oversoul. Individual salvation denies our collective unity. The notion that a person might be saved by association with a single community rings particularly hollow. Also troublesome is the idea of salvation through one specific set of beliefs about, for example, Jesus' death and resurrection, which diminishes his teachings along with his humanity. The rapture myths told in the popular Left Behind books fortify the divisive notion among some that we elect few can leave the evil others behind and receive rich rewards meant only for us, for our tribe, our nation, not rewards to share unto a common humanity and not part of a common practice. The prosperity gospel is another example in which those who are prospering have curried God's favor. I can picture the myths of unamazed disappointment in Jesus' eyes as he's informed that the blessings he's bestowed upon the poor and marginalized in his Beatitudes have been reworked for a more refined audience. A theology espousing that those who have are those who deserve, while those who do not have are those who do not deserve, this flies in the face of nearly every moral teaching. Yet it seems to be a most central tenet of the religion most closely associated with the equivocal assertion on our money, in God we trust. So a change is in order. We forget that we're connected. And that's a thing. It's real. We forget because we're constantly pressed into thinking of ourselves as individuals. That's a thing. Forgive yourself for falling and remember then who you are. Forgive us each when we perpetuate narratives of separateness and then remember and reframe the story. We need to integrate humanity according to new principles that centralize connections between humans along with the human connection to the earth. I chose to be UU some time ago because I see our seven principles as laying a groundwork of right relationship at every level. Yet we must understand the foundation of love undergirding the groundwork of our principles. A love that provides a rich context for creating beloved community. Only from love do we discover the still small voice within, the one that too often gets drowned out, or whose message is disregarded as too much of a stretch. But here we must, in order to understand, and stretch we must to commit to connection and accountability, lest those principles we hold dear wash away into a clanging gong of irrelevancy. Howard Thurman, minister at the Fellowship of All Peoples in San Francisco, formerly his pastor there, in his groundbreaking book, calls us to practice beloved community. The book is called The Search for Common Ground. At once, he affirms our own identities and also looks beyond these identities to that which we have in common with all of life. He writes, "The human spirit cannot abide the enforced loneliness of isolation. We literally feed on each other. Where this nourishment is not available, the human spirit and the human body both sicken and die. It is not an overstatement that the purpose of all of the arrangements and conventions that make up the formal and informal agreements under which people live in society is to nourish one another with one another. The safeguards by which individuals or groups of people establish the boundaries of intimate and collective belonging are meant ultimately to guarantee self-nourishment. All of these are by social expressions of the underlying experience of life with itself. Life feeds on life. Life is nourished by life. It is life's experience with itself that establishes the ground for the dogma that life is eternal. Life calls us to nourish each other with one another, to take responsibility for what we each do, knowing our own egos and understanding of self, along with expectations of accountability for ourselves and others. This nourishment also calls for self-differentiation, supporting others to flourish into their best selves without trying to push or control them. This connection helps develop a sense of trust which grows over time. This trusting connection provides a mature sense of security, something I think many of us desperately seek these days. Security that each of us can express our authentic selves without fear of losing our relationships, our means of earning potential, our housing, access to clean water, or healthy food. When we work for connected community to accurately reflect our loving, unified oversoul, we are asking for a robust investment in the commons that we share. Laws and budgets that invest in all people, truly trying to lift all within our community to join around greatest common factors, are essential. We're called to elicit radical changes away from the punitive justice of prisons, both private and government-run, meting out punishment among those whose behaviors are often symptoms of this fragmented world. And we're called upon to change toward a restorative system of justice, where steps are consensually agreed upon within affected communities about what must actually happen to prevent crimes from happening a second time, or, when possible, from happening a first time. We're called to create community gardens and to share with neighbors the earth's rich bounty in backyard gardens we even call private. We're called to find ways of co-housing for better relationships with others and better use of the land which sustains us. We're called to create security nets for food and housing, to follow examples like the state of Utah, for example, which recently committed to ending homelessness by providing homes to all those without. Instead of the recent trend of privatizing our world's resources, let us find ways to share them publicly through lending libraries for tools, toys, seeds, books, clothes, and whatever we can imagine. Let us find ways to publicly support utilities, even, such as water, electricity, and internet, so they're open for all to use. Let us conjure up favors and gifts for those who we call strangers, to show them that the universe itself does care for their well-being, even if sometimes in a random way. As I ask these things, as I invite them into existence, I'm aware that I ask not to feed my limited human ego, this here, but to satisfy factors of need and desire, I experience our underlying unified humanity self wanting. At least those who are not in the process of feeding their own egos, sometimes they still don't want that. Finally, as the Oversoul consciousness works not only across space but also time, let us plan for a rich, common future. All of our success, our very lives, and those of our descendants depend on safe, arable soil for growing food, and on clean, fresh water for healthy hydration, and clean air free from toxins. And humanity has yet to experience the true unity of a healthy socioeconomic, political environment based on a shared, unified soul commitment to harmonious living, to end the divisions of quarreling nation states, to unite as one people free from the strife of oppressive power, struggles for land and other resources, and instead celebrate the beauty and abundance for which the earth has blessed us. That would be most reflective of our inherent worth and dignity. Finally, let us lift up a breathing theology, one which celebrates the feeling of doing good works and the mysterious combinations that arise to life when we connect with others. Imagine a theology which includes spiritual moments of awe upon hearing a symphony or choir, collectively voicing composed harmonies with precision. But then there are also jazz improv sessions of a greatly different quality, but no less awe-inspiring, as all contribute their voices. If we take away the music, we see models here for real-world togetherness. Our sixth Unitarian Universalist principle calls to us the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. To me, this does not mean one world community, but rather a system of connected communities in which some will appreciate the order of a composed social setting, while some prefer the extemporaneous from the heart. A system in which not all cultures will agree on how to be in community and may need to choose to be separate but amicable. A system of communities in which we may understand ourselves as different in ways and want to allow freedom for those differences. But for peace's sake, let's choose not to be divided in the ways that we most need each other as companions on our Earth's journey. As Unitarians and as Universalists, we see salvation as an ongoing pattern of means and tools in which the habits we form will create the world we live in. And that our salvation, our collective liberation, is all bound up with that of every other person. To achieve this, we must step by step overcome the partitions between each other and the estrangement that we share from our common oversoul selves, the human communities that we compose. And through consensus and careful intention, let us build up the social and political infrastructures necessary to truly allow for integration of humanity as a whole, in all its various ways of being, to truly allow freedoms and divergence wherever possible, and least restrictive laws to ensure justice in which tyrannies and oppressions are cast aside. That each person can integrate into a circle vast and wide enough to include their true selves. Such would be the nature of a project of the love underlying our common human essence. This which goes by many names, this essence that sends prophets, this essence that sends visionaries, this essence within that sends dreams and reminders that this sphere upon which we ride is to be our heaven, our only heaven, and we will grow into the world we dream of most clearly when we recognize, love, and celebrate our collective human self.
I think we're going to skip our polylog today because our dome isn't open, so we can't see the sunlight. So I will invite everyone to come by the social hall after the service and have some coffee and talk further with Joel and ask any questions and things in that area and also outside as well. We extinguish the chalice here that it may glow gently in our hearts. May it light your path as you leave this place. May it guide your way until we are together again. Please rise as you're willing and able and join in the singing of hymn number 1028, The Player of Commitment, in the Teal Hymnal.
Thank you.
close our service with a reconciliation prayer by Joy Harjo. We gather by the shore of all knowledge as peoples who were put here by a God who wanted relatives. This God was lonely for touch and imagined herself as a woman with children to suckle, to sing with, to continue the web of the terrifyingly beautiful cosmos of her womb. This God became a father who wished for others to walk beside him in the belly of creation. This God laughed and cried with us as a sister at the sweet tragedy of our predicament, foolish humans, or built a fire as a brother to keep us warm. This God who grew to love us became our lover, sharing tables of food enough for everyone in this whole world. O sun, moon, stars, our other relatives peering at us from the inside of God's house, walk with us as we climb into the next century naked, but for the stories we have of each other. Keep us from giving up in this land of nightmares, which is also the land of miracles. We sing our song, which we've been promised has no beginning or end. All acts of kindness are lights in the war for justice. We gather up these strands broken from the web of life. They shiver with our love as we call them the names of our relatives and carry them to our home made of the four directions and sing. Of the south, where we feasted and were given new clothes. Of the west, where we gave up the best of us to the stars as food for the battle. Of the north, where we cried because we were forsaken by our dreams. Of the east, because return to us is the spirit of all that we love. Blessed be.